Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. You're listening to episode number 91. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and this program is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES at checkout for additional savings, as well as to let them know that you support the program. Guys, today we have with us IFBB Pro John Jewett. Along with him, we've got Deborah Terpstra. Both of them are coaches, and we are going to discuss coaching females. A lot of this information could apply to both men and women, but we are definitely going to focus today on the female side of the sport. And I have a few reasons that I want to do this. First of all, some of this information is going to be basic. And I had spoke with Maya Underwood, the anthropologist and researcher, just a few episodes ago. She had mentioned that one of the critiques from people that she had spoke to was that sometimes we go deep on Advices Radio, and yeah, we do. And they said that maybe at times we assume that the listener already has a foundation of education. Now, I don't want to create a show that's just going to spoon feed you. That's never our goal. I don't think that would be a benefit to the listener whatsoever to just tell you, here, you take this, you do that. I don't ever think that just giving you instructions blankly is going to help you learn anything. But I do want to take that into consideration, and for that reason, I wanted to do a show that would take us back just a little bit, and that would give us an ability to kind of cover all those bases from the start. Another thing is that I come across a lot of people, especially females, that decide, hey, I want to get involved in competition, and they don't know what to do. They've been doing this for anywhere from 3 months to 3 years, and they just know that their friends are doing it, and they decide they got the itch. They want to see what it's all about. And so for these reasons, I thought this would be a great opportunity to bring on John, who is definitely passionate about coaching. He's got a lot of great education and information about coaching females, and give us an opportunity to talk to Deb, because she's a really bright woman who puts a lot of care and passion into what she's doing as a coach and as a women's physique athlete herself. So we are going to talk about all aspects of where a woman wants to be to begin a prep. And not only that, we're going to talk about the pitfalls that can occur during that prep, the issues that can come about, and basically how to keep yourself healthy through the process. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends, and they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. All right, guys, up next, we've got a couple of really intelligent people. I'm glad to have you back, John Jewett, IFBB Pro. Thanks, man. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having me again. I had a lot of fun last time on the show, so it's always fun to come back and talk about some different topics with you.
Absolutely. We got a lot of good feedback, by the way, first of all, on the last episode. So I had a lot of people reach out to me and say thank you to you for sharing your thoughts and your education. So that was huge. Today we are going to talk about females in the sport, and specifically from your perspective as a coach. And along with you, we have one of your friends, and now I'll say one of my friends too, and that is Deborah Terpstra. I'm saying that correct, right, Deborah?
You got it.
All right. I worked on it a little bit. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Awesome. And so you live maybe 2 hours away from me. We're both in the state of Michigan. How are you hanging in there with the weather? I got to ask you that first, because it's like negative 10 outside right now.
I know. I'm going a little stir crazy. It's been 3 days since I've been to the gym. So today, this morning, I was pulling out some of my my bands, trying to figure out exercises to do at home just so I could get some movement in. It's a little bit nuts over here.
And I know, John, you're not dealing with that at all in Texas, are you?
No, it's probably really nice temperatures compared to y'all. So we're in the 40s and 50s, and it's been sunny. It's like those bright sunny days that are cool, which are nice to be out in. So I'm sorry, guys.
You're killing us here. You're killing us here. So how did you guys meet? Are you, now I'm not totally sure, Deborah, are you a client of John's?
I was, I did inquire about working with him for a show last year, but I was having a lot of digestive issues and had decided that I was going to try to remedy those first. Not that John wasn't helping, he totally was, but I had a lot of, I think, life stresses going on that didn't relate to that. So I had some other things I needed to take care of. But John and I met just via Instagram. I started following him, and I was having some questions about a client, and I ended up contacting him, and he was super duper helpful. And I realized how smart he is, and he's very passionate and compassionate with his clients and just wants to educate people. And we just, I think, just kind of clicked. So I have a great respect for him.
That's cool. And so you have quite a client list of your own. This is your full-time gig, right? Is coaching.
Well, actually, I also have a cleaning business.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So I kind of split between the two. I grew up on a farm, so I really do like the blue collar type of work. And so I can sit at the computer part time, and I can do some active blue collar type work part time also. So I love it.
Right on. I think we can all relate to that. John, what's catch us up real quick before we get started here. What's going on with your bodybuilding?
So I am still planning on doing the Chicago Pro. Awesome. in July. So that leaves me right around 22 weeks out. So in 2 weeks, I'm going to start prep at 20 weeks. I'm going to give myself some time. So I've just kind of been floating around that 248, 249 body weight mark, and with plans to still try to make it down to 212. And I think I can. It's going to be close. As last year I got to a low of like 206. So I figure, all right, I have a little bit of room to make some improvements, and I should still fit within that category. But if, hell breaks loose or something and I can't, then they do have the open in Chicago, but, I prefer 212. So.
Okay. So, and I think this is kind of like a good place to jump into our topic too. The fact that you've put a lot of thought into this. You didn't just decide one day, hey, I want to start prep, guys. I'm just going to do this. Like, this is the nutrition. I mean, we call it, you're starting prep at 20 weeks out. But realistically, what you're doing now is part of that, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, prep for this show started right after my last show, what shows I was picking and planning out the each phase, and just the titles change, but for the most part, the basics are always there of what I'm doing with diet and training and things like that. So it's a nonstop prep, I guess, if you want to say.
Yeah. That's kind of the way that I try to see things too. So, you know, we're going to focus this program toward females, but I think that some of the advice is stuff that both men and women, you know, can you know, learn from. I want to ask you guys, you know, what's the best way to begin, you know, a diet? Where is the starting point? Let's say we have somebody who's just been working at gaining muscle and, you know, they're growing and they, how, at what stage of that do you actually want to think about beginning a diet? Where do you want them to be?
For me, I would have to, you know, ask that person, and just like I send a client assessment form and get gathering a bunch of different variables and things about that person, like looking at, for one, what is their current life situation? Are there external stressors? Like, are they healthy mentally? Because the rigors of dieting, it's going to challenge all that, and it can make all those stressors seem even greater to that person. So mentally, are they even in a good spot to start a diet? But more so, we're talking about contest prep, right? So yeah, because contest prep is going to be very, very challenging. That might not be right for that person. So I think seeing that lifestyle, is it set up for contest prep, and how are the stressors affecting them around that lifestyle?
That makes sense. Deborah, is there anything that you look out for when somebody comes to you and they say, hey, I want to start doing a prep? Anything that flags that might go off to you that might make you say, hey, this might not be a good idea to start?
You know, I think one of the things that people need to understand is that bodybuilding competitions are a display of muscle. And a lot of people, when they start, want to do it because they've lost a lot of weight. That's what I get a lot with females, I think. And it's, you know, it's fine. It's fine. Anyone can do a bodybuilding competition, but it's a matter of how important is it to you to have a good experience? Do you want to do well? You know, because I think people don't do a lot of research about it before they step into it, and they don't have a lot of realistic expectations, you know, of the muscle they can build in a short period of time. You know, it takes years. We all know that it takes years. So, and I agree 100% with what John was saying. I don't like to predict people dropping out of prep, but yeah, you often can when you see how they're starting. You know, I've got, you know, they'll say, I've got this going on and this and things with my kids and everything else. And, you know, I know when I was prepping for my first show, I feel like I had a really good environmental setup for that. And it was still difficult. You know what I mean? And I didn't achieve the level of conditioning that I wanted to. And, you know, you can pick yourself apart with all these different things, but when you think that you have a pretty clean environment and it's, you know, that it's still difficult, you know, then you see these people having factors that, you know, are going to affect, you know, the outcome, or if they can even continue. I think as a coach, it's smart to be aware and know all those factors.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You know, I neglected to introduce you, I think, enough, Deborah. Oh. So I didn't tell the world because I listened, John. I hadn't heard Deborah's voice until today. Yeah, I follow her on social media. We've talked on DM, and she's is a jacked lady. Like, she's got a good amount of muscle on her. But listening to her voice, I would think, oh, what is she, bikini? You know, what division? You know, that's what I would guess. So I'm sure. I want to stop the listeners at home right now. If you're picturing this like little tiny frail woman, you have it all wrong. This lady's jacked.
This is a women's physique competitor. Some massive triceps, right?
Absolutely. I needed to make that correction. Just like throw that out there.
You're hilarious.
What?
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. I wanted to make sure we were right. You know.
Yeah. So I think Deborah has a good point. Like, definitely, is that person ready to compete? Like, when I was entering my first bodybuilding competition, like, I had been lifting for a long time, but I picked a show like a year away to work on things, areas that I thought were weak, and you know, plan out that whole process. But on on top of these other things, say you are in a good life point and you're also at a good spot to compete, I think next you have to look at the physiological response. Like, are they seeing a good response? And what I mean by that is, usually like females that I have, they come to me sometimes and they're on like 1300 calories or less. Ooh. And they're already doing an hour of cardio and they're going to be 20 plus weeks out. It's like, and that's maintaining their weight. Right. So yeah. It's like, well, where are we going to go from here? It's only going to be less calories and probably more cardio. And that's not right. So how do you know if this is not right? And I say in general, if you could look at someone like what maybe they should be calorie wise, which for a female, if you just, this is really rough, but maybe take their body weight times maybe 13 and put that in, you know, relation with body fat. So if you're really high in body fat, it's going to kind of overestimate your needs. But if you aren't kind of close to that, then something might be off. And that's when you kind of need to pick and get down to it. Like, are you coming off of a diet phase recently, or this might be time to look into blood work, you know, or hormones off? Are you having menstrual cycles, or could, you know, is it, and that's, we already talked about lifestyle, but maybe stressors could be playing into that as well. So.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. I've had, you know, several females who are, you know, doing cardio year round is healthy, but doing excessive cardio year round to maintain, you know, a level of leanness does not, you know, that sets you up for 2 to 3 hours of cardio for prep at the end. And nobody can, I mean, you can't do that. You just can't do that, you know?
Yeah. So what is, you know, let's look at it this way then. So we've got somebody who is considering doing a prep. They're at that, let's say they're at that point now where they're doing an hour and a half of cardio and their calories are already low. How can they adjust that? How can they back out of that situation to get into a better place so they can come to you and say, hey, Deborah, or hey, John, I want to do a prep and be in a good place?
So I would say definitely the first thing is taking a dieting break. So, and by a break, I don't mean, hey, let's just go eat cheeseburgers and have cheat meals. I just mean back off from that calorie deficit and bring it back up to a maintenance level, which could be even increased slightly over time, and hold that to try to bring back some metabolic effect. And then depending, usually what I see is a lot of people doing like steady state cardio that could probably be back down, and maybe they'd be able to increase their weight training as well. Hmm. Or, and then swap out maybe some of that steady state for HIIT cardio, just because it'd have a greater metabolic effect.
Yeah.
And do string that out. I mean, for some of these girls, it can take up to a year to get to a good point metabolically after things that I've seen happen. Beyond that, I would say look at your blood work too. That's very, very important.
Yeah. Deborah, do you have anything you wanted to add to that?
I was just thinking about what John was saying about how calculated he was with doing his first show. And I just wanted to, you know, mention that when I first had decided that I wanted to compete, it was in 2012 when Women's Physique came out, because up until like that point, I had just been a lot more interested in men's bodybuilding. I just thought it was beautiful. And when Women's Physique came out, I thought, okay, this is something that I could do. I could do it naturally. That was kind of what the category was, I think, intended when it originally came out. And I was prepping for a show in 2013 and just had decided I wasn't going to have the muscle mass that I wanted for the look that I wanted to step on stage. And so I took another 9 months, I think it was, to try to build. And because it was the beginning point of, you know, I hadn't been lifting that long, I think I was able to put on 5 to 7 pounds of muscle during that time. All so right. It was, you know, and so then I was able to compete in 2014 and, you know, it looked a lot more like I wanted to look. But my point was, you know, the first thing that I ask, you know, girls when they, because I think just because of social media, there's just so much almost like a pressure, like this is what I want to do and I need to compete to be, you know, I think a lot of people want to be Insta famous you know, I always, as just a baseline rule, I say, you know, have you been lifting routinely for a year and eating consistently to build muscle for a year? Because I think 3, 4, 5, 6 months into it, a lot of these girls, you know, my friends compete, they get, and then they want to diet down and there's just nothing there to, you know? So, yeah,
especially with the girls that don't necessarily have genetics like you, you know, it can be hard to just get a capped delt, really, you know, for a lot of women.
Yeah. You're so kind. That was a nice thing.
Well, I mean it, though, because you're a natural competitor, right?
Yes.
And I know that you've openly talked about that, which, and I think that's mind blowing. It's obviously it's not going to be the case with a lot of women that are in the women's physique division. But, you know, while I bring up hormones, you know, John, you mentioned, you know, check your hormones, get your lab work done. What are the problems that we see with women when they have been dieting too hard?
These women hormones are very complicated because they're all integrated together. Okay. I'll have a lot of girls that have come to me that have been post-contest or just in a long dieting phase. And especially post-contest, you'll see like a loss of the menstrual cycle, which usually you see cortisol is increasing. And you can produce cortisol from progesterone. So you're now lowering progesterone.
Really?
Because cortisol is decreasing. Progesterone can also influence estrogen and testosterone levels in females. So what usually I'll see across the board is there'll be low progesterone, low estrogen, low testosterone. All of them will just be bottomed out and they probably won't be having a menstrual cycle. And it's very likely too, there's some type of course, when dieting for all of us, thyroid production decreases of those hormones. So there could be a decrease in thyroid levels as well. So you're just kind of bottomed out across all these hormones. So for a female, if you're not having a menstrual cycle, it would be a really good idea to get some blood work drawn and have those hormones checked to see. But also, if you're not getting the response that you think you should be getting, it would be a good time to get those hormones checked as well.
Okay. Deborah, have you ever run into that yourself while you're pushing hard and had hormone issues?
Well, you know, it's funny because John and I were talking about this last night, and I was saying, you know, female hormones do obviously fluctuate on a cycle, but I was asking him, do you think it is good to have a baseline of hormones? And it is, because, you know, when you are having problems, you have something to refer back to say, oh no, this isn't how it was, you know? So I had my hormones tested back in 2015. I was starting to have acne along my jaw and my jaw and my throat. Okay. And I just, you know, I wanted to know what was going on, and my testosterone levels were actually below the, what's it called? The range that they're supposed to be.
Huh.
So, and I know, you know, I was like 38 years old. I know I'm getting into this where things are definitely changing hormone wise, but, you know, I actually was sent to a dermatologist and they put me on spironolactone, which I believe would, you know, suppress testosterone even more. And I had my test levels checked again in 2016. And so they were like 0.7 and, or is it 7? I guess it's 7. And, you know, then they were up to like 8, and I had been on spironolactone for about a year. And then I went off it. And so, you know, I figured I just had low test and have been lingering around that for a very long period of time. But as far as like, you know, as far as like competing, and you know, I've never lost a menstrual cycle or gotten to the point where, and you know, I may not just not have been lean enough. That's very possible. But you know, it seems to be very prevalent with a lot of the bikini girls that I know that have, you know, they'll lose their periods pretty quickly into prep, and it's gone for the rest of the time. So, but as far as, you know, any type of hormonal issues or anything like that, I haven't experienced any of that really. I get mine tested because, you know, I think, oh, I'm feeling kind of run down, but you know, life of a single mom, I think, is kind of it's stressful. So yeah,
I'm going to take this into a little different direction for a second. I want to talk training, because, you know, we're talking about making sure that all your hormones are in an optimal place. We're talking about making sure that you're able to get those calories up so that you have something to remove, you know, get the cardio low so that you have something, you have room to add it. Now the training, you know, John, we had you on the Hugest Fuck episode, and we talked a lot about training, man. I could tell you're really passionate about it. Do you have any variation in your mindset when it comes to the way a woman should train?
I do. And I would say for the most part, a lot of these general weight training concepts are the same across genders, you know, like what causes hypertrophy, like mechanical tension and metabolic stress and using progressive overload. Like, all these things are the basis of things, but there are gender differences, and you can find this in the literature as well. And typically women have better recovery capacity than men. Yeah.
Really?
And they can do more sets and reps and recover, have improved recovery. So they can handle higher training volume. It's like, I trained my wife before, and I'll do like a set of 10, and I'm just gasping for air until the next, you know, I like need a few minutes, and she'll do one, and a minute later she's like, all right, let's do the next set. I'm like, geez, I can't recover. Like, she can handle a much higher training volume. So like with like programming for her, like I have more working sets in place for her, and she could train more frequently as well too.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I was a very high volume trainer. You know, I didn't know a lot about training when I first started, and I did a lot of, you know, those 2-hour gym sessions or whatever. And it takes its toll over, you know, it takes its toll. But I see more with guys who are trying to do volume training, the injuries occur, I think, tend to occur more than with females. You do see females doing more volume training.
Do you, how do you suggest one of your clients, female clients, Deborah, sets up with their training plan? Like, how many times a week? How do you break things up?
It's entirely based on the goals with their body structure and recovery. I think everything comes down to recovery. I mean, I personally am on a 3 days on, 1 day off training split right now, but I will often take an extra rest day. Just because, you know, I've learned from my own injuries that when you push and you know, you're not recovered to push, then your body's going to push back and you're going to have problems.
I think this is a an interesting thing with, like, when you're feeling like your recovery is dropping or not, because there is some stuff in looking at women that shows around the menstrual cycles, there's changes in recovery capacity, depending on what area they're in. And I think that is the most applicable thing for women. And you don't see a lot of studies, because a lot of times they just use males in studies because of this menstrual cycle changes, and it adds just an extra variable into the researcher, so that you won't have a lot of studies in women. But an interesting one was they took the study. They took like 20 women and trained them over like 3 months, three menstrual cycles. They had one leg, and I should explain this to you first. The menstrual cycle is basically divided into two phases: the follicular phase, so right when a woman starts her period, starts bleeding. That's the first part of it into the follicular phase, and they ovulate. Then they had the luteal phase, which is like the last part of the menstrual cycle. So they had these women train one leg. They did 8 training sessions in the follicular phase, the first part, and 2 sessions in the luteal phase. The other leg, they did the opposite with. So they trained 2 sessions in the beginning, follicular phase, and 8 sessions in the luteal phase. And what they found was the muscle diameter on the leg that had the higher follicular phase training was greater than in the luteal phase. And same with strength increases as well. So women in this early like follicular phase, like from the day they start the period to about halfway, about 2/3 of the way through, they have improved ability to build muscle and have improved recovery capacity during that phase.
That makes so much sense. You know, we had Victoria Felkar on here a while back, and she had said that if you're in that point where you're feeling PMS and you don't feel great, that if you need to take time, like, don't push yourself too hard at that time. So it would make sense that if you're listening to your body, that you would push while you're able to make the best gains. And then during that phase leading up to the period, I would think that's have you ever suggested, John, that somebody backs off if they aren't feeling great?
Yeah, so that's what I've trying to been getting more communication from my females and about when they're starting their menstrual cycle and signs that that's occurring. So usually like that week before their periods starts, when you would have this decrease in strength and ability to recover, like that's a great time to do like a deload in training or just add in an extra rest day is all it might take. And then you could periodize that training to where like right when period starts and on, you could start progressively increasing training volume and stimulus. Then right back when they hit that time right before the period and those symptoms come back, decrease the volume and allow some greater recovery to occur.
This leads me to think about nutrition. Would you then alter nutrition in any way due to the fact that now you're training differently, or would you just keep that the same? I'm sure that I'm sure it's a case per case, but would it be a possibility?
No, there is a possibility. And a lot of this, what I was talking about earlier, it looks like the estrogen to progesterone balance is what's really playing in here. Like estrogen has a good impact on recovery. It can help with promoting glucose uptake in fibers. It can estrogen has a suppressing effect to protein catabolism, while progesterone kind of promotes it. So during that early phase, you have this kind of rise in estrogen. It peaks, and then the later phase, you have the biggest rise in progesterone. So how does that play into nutrition? Well, you probably handle more carbohydrates within that earlier phase, and then towards the later phase, you could probably reduce them slightly. The only thing to this, and Deborah, you might want to touch on this, is in that later phase, in the luteal phase, usually women consume more calories. And there's higher craving. So you're going to decrease someone's food when they're craving it the most. Like that's an issue, you know?
Don't you feel though that there's a metabolic increase during that time? So when I have my clients check in, that is one of the questions. What was the date of your last period? And a lot of times girls will give me feedback too, just about, even during prep, where it's just like, I don't know what came over me. I ate a bunch of, this, that, or whatever. And it's not just prep. It's prep combined with hormones in that phase of their menstrual cycle. And, number one thing with, coaching is there's no shame. You want the feedback, you want the truth, and you want to know what's going on. So, I'm kind of like, I understand why this happens. What can we do to set this up so that it, and a lot of times, I will adjust their diet during that time to increase calories just because it prevents long-term an issue of a binge or something like that. So being aware of these things, I think, is super important.
That's awesome. This is some great information. I really appreciate it, guys. One thing I want to ask about hormone testing. So when we're talking about these two phases and that hormones are kind of all over the place, this is a question that came up recently on one of the other programs at the Advices Network. Is there a better time than other times to actually do a woman's blood work.
Yes. And what I typically has seen is you want to test around day 21 of your menstrual cycle. So from the day one, counting from the time you start bleeding,
okay,
that 21 days after, set that as your baseline. That will be right after the time someone should ovulate, and you should also be seeing like a peak level of progesterone. But you have to have a baseline, basically, like we had talked about earlier, and like Deborah was saying, like you have to know where you're starting at to compare back to. Because if you look at someone's blood work, if they had an estrogen level, then you have like three different normal ranges set for that. Depending on what time period you're in the menstrual cycle. So I think it's best to set like day 21 and always test at day 21. That way it's very comparable over time.
That makes total sense.
The cool thing about when you do have blood work done is that they do put that factor in. So, so if you don't test during that time, you can take into, consideration that variable, but obviously you want to have the least amount of variables possible if you can.
That makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And for women that aren't menstruating, I would just say have it done anytime. Because if you're not seeing that menstrual cycle, you're probably also not seeing these fluctuations in estrogen and progesterone that should be happening. So at that point, it's just get tested. And I think it'll be important to know, if, like I was saying earlier, like how estrogen does influence recovery. If you're not having these rises in estrogen, like you're limiting your recovery capacity, and you probably will feel kind of run down. So
I think that, if the other meatheads are out there listening to this, I assume we have more females listening to this episode, but if the meatheads are still tuning in with us, John, I think our gears are all turning, because you're talking about estrogen and recovery. And I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to be destroying my estrogen level, especially if I'm trying to grow, right?
Right. That is, and I was thinking about this before entering the show, like, man, I'm going to talk about how you want some estrogen. And I saw a study not too long ago, and they were looking at use of anastrozole in men, and it was showing like when they are dipping below 10, like just crashing estrogen, it's unfavorable for body composition. So you need it in that a good range is all I'm saying. You're like there's not these black and whites. Like what I said earlier, like progesterone has like a kind of a catabolic effect. That doesn't mean take all progesterone away. It just means you want it at a healthy range. It has a lot of other good functions too. And same with estrogen. So
it makes sense. It was just the meathead came out in me for a minute there. I started thinking about what I need to do to get my gains. Let's go into something. This is a big one. We hear this all over social media. We've seen all sorts of articles about it. Thyroid metabolic damage. This is kind of something I think we've been addressing since the start of this. But when you've been talking about getting the food up, getting yourself into a good position to be able to start dieting, what is metabolic damage? And let's talk about thyroid.
I guess you'd have to say does metabolic damage, in like I said, I'd have a hard time saying it because it's like in research, it's hard to really even confirm like metabolic damage, but you see it more so just in working with people that come to you and the food intake that they should be at, they're not at. And so if it is like a hypothyroidism issue, that's very likely, and that would decrease metabolic output. If you want to label it as metabolic damage, I guess you could, but there's not like a clear definition in the medical community for metabolic damage. But definitely if you're having your blood work tested and your levels are off, definitely consult with your doctor and find what is the primary cause of that, rather than trying to take it into your own hands. So,
yeah, I guess what I'm getting from you is, and I've kind of heard this before, I guess the term metabolic damage is it's almost like a blanket to cover all of these things that we're discussing about getting yourself into a good position to be able to diet so that, you actually can get where you want to be. But I guess maybe what you're telling us is look for the specifics as to what actually is going wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, you always want the cause of it. I feel like it's that term's misused as well. A lot of people will jump to be like, "Oh, I'm metabolic damaged," when that's not always the case. Like that, maybe they're just still eating in a calorie deficit, and they're still going to be metabolically suppressed some from that. So they just need to raise calories up. They're not damaged. It's just that natural downregulation that's happened. Once they bring calories up to the normal range, a lot of that comes back for the majority of people. There's like the the Minnesota's starvation study. They took like military men and just starved them intentionally down to extremely low body fats, and then allowed them to refeed. And basically, once calories came back up and body fat came back up to a baseline level, all hormone function was restored.
No kidding.
So if they're trying to keep, like Deborah was saying earlier, if like you're trying to stay lean year round, well, you probably aren't recovering metabolically fully. So I don't think it's necessarily always this permanent damage that's occurred. It's just a more of this temporary suppression, depending on what they're doing regarding nutrition, training.
If you don't have like blood work to support, you know, this metabolic damage, then, you know, I would definitely start looking into other factors. I think about Sydney Gillian, who was on, I mean, she was on Survivor and she became Miss Olympia. So I think that her body recovered pretty good from being in a starvation mode for a period of months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. So big topic here then, and this is the reality, especially for the women that are in the bigger divisions, like women's physique, is drugs, anabolics, thyroid hormone, stuff like that. Man, this has got to be, I mean, we're talking about getting yourself into this good, healthy place before you start dieting. How are these things going to impact that, John?
Well, at least using drugs while you're on a contest prep mitigates any effects of what you would normally have decreases in while you're dieting. Because normally in the dieting process, you're having decrease in all these hormones, testosterone's dropping. If you're losing your menstrual cycle, estrogen, progesterone's dropping off, thyroid's dropping off.
Yeah.
And you're replacing all these things, right? So you're adding some type of anabolic in to help with muscle retention. You're adding some type of thyroid hormone in to increase metabolic output. But it only further suppresses those other levels and makes that effect even greater. Mm. So coming post-show, it could take longer to recover. I have lots of girls that come to me after doing this years on end with, you know, using thyroid hormone or different anabolics, and they're permanently have suppress their thyroid. Like, it's not coming back. We've taken time to try to restore thyroid function. It's gone. They have to be on thyroid medication. Their menstrual cycle's gone. They will never have kids. So they have to now supplement. And women can do like a hormone replacement with testosterone. And that women have very low amounts that they need to do. So I've never condone using testosterone in a female unless it's under reasons for hormone replacement under like a doctor supervision. So that's the reality, is that when you're going to be choosing to use these things, you do run a risk of permanently ruining functions of your body, like possibly reproductive functions or thyroid functions that you'd have to be taking a medication for a long time. And this stuff creeps up, you know. It's you could run something and be fine. But this is the long-term effects, you know, that creep up over time, just like guys or for women too, like the cardiovascular effects of using anabolics. Like you're not gonna have a heart attack after one cycle, unlikely, right? It's probably after 20 years of doing this. So you have to weigh in that. I think, you know, Deborah, you should weigh in as someone being natural. Like, what is your thought on just doing natural training versus using these anabolics, and what do you advise people when they come to you and like, hey, this is what I want to do, or I heard this is what girls use, or staying natural? What's your advice that you give them?
It's really tough because I feel like people succumb to the pressure of wanting to use drugs because they think that's part of what they need to do. And, you know, I'm going to be stepping on stage next to girls who are going to be using things. And I feel like there's a process. And I think the reason why that I've held off to this point and will likely never use any type of anabolic, even if I do compete again, I understand the purpose of them. I understand that, you know, especially taking something mild like Anavar during the last 8 weeks of prep is really going to help you retain tissue when you're in that deficit, especially for a female, you know, and that's what I would say would be, I mean, there's no safe, but you know what I mean? Like that would be like a mild, how you would go about that. It's just, you know, I think people don't take into consideration diet and training. And when you haven't taken those two factors to the levels that they can be taken to first, you know, I feel like you need to max those things out. It's a lot, you know, you could say it with females, you could say it with guys too. You know, you got 18, 19 year old guys taking more drugs than, you know, than you have pro guys taking.
Sure.
And for me, you know, I just, it's probably, you know, I'm old and wise and conservative at this point. Because, you know, I was thinking about the other day how, you know, I even have, there's a lot of women at my age who are like, well, I'm done having kids, you know, I'm, let's say halfway through my life. Why can't I? But for me, I'm at a point in my life where my body, especially after this past year, I've had several injuries, like I'm healthy. And it really made me think about how happy I am to have a healthy functioning body. And as somebody who has ever taken a prescription, and I always get the side effects, like I don't even read the side effects because I don't want to know and put it in my head. And I always like, you know, why am I, you know, why is my nose running when I'm supposed to be, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to experience the worst of, you know, the worst possible thing that could happen from taking something like this. I just feel like it's a safety factor. So, you know, and with it not being legal, you do not know what you're getting. And I think, you know, you see this all the time with girls who will do one show and, you know, it's like you did a 12-week prep and now your voice is too octaves lower. And like, that doesn't happen from taking, you know, real Anavar at 5 milligrams a day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wouldn't think. So, you know, I want people to be careful. And as, you know, a coach, it's my job to care about the health of my clients and then figure out what they're willing to do and what is best. But, you know, if you've done a show, you didn't come in looking great for that show, you didn't have proper diet and training protocol down, and now you want to take Anavar and, you know, and Winstrol or something. And it's like, first of all, you add compounds one at a time. You know, you don't start throwing a bunch of stuff in there. And, you know, I just feel like there's a process, there's layers to this. And people are, I think, impatient, and they think that, you know, taking these, you know, taking drugs or whatever it is going to get them somewhere quicker, but it's a process. And I think people need to understand that it is, you know, you have to do it one step at a time.
I think you make a really good point about the social sides of this, that there are women that are under the misconception that they have to do this. There's, you know, I think that especially, like, let's look at the bikini division. I've talked to girls that have done very well, you know, been successful, but then they say, hey, I'm going to the national level, so now I need to take Anavar in order right. to do that. But I feel like we can't say enough that that might not necessarily be the case, right? You don't need to just because you're doing a specific show, right?
Well, it's even like, you know, I've had girls who are like, you know, can we start using Clen or something like that? And it's like, well, you're not even doing a half hour of cardio a day. You're not even, you know what I mean? I think a lot of people want a quicker, easier route, but anyone who does contest prep and loves it knows it's brutal. And that's part of the struggle that you love about it. You know, you know?
Yeah. These drugs definitely mask poor diets and improper training. And so I would definitely say for someone like starting out, like put 3 to 4 solid years of doing diet and training right, and possibly competing in that, and see how far that gets you. And I don't, because I have people that come to me like, I've been training for 5 years. Like, no, you've been kind of playing with weights for 5 years and haven't really done it right. So 3 to 4 years of doing everything exactly how you should be doing, and then at that point, see where you're at, and you'd probably have a better knowledge set of what these risks are and where you are realistically in relation to everyone else. And then maybe make those decisions from there.
Well, Scott, you had asked me last night about if I was going to compete this year. And so last year I had, I still slightly have it, but not nearly to the extent, have severe tendonitis in both my elbows. I had a slight herniation in a lower back disc. And, you know, I'm feeling good. And from learning from John, more and more about training, you know, I had originally, you know, I had been one of those people that had, you know, I had an arm day, I had a different body part every day. Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, we just kind of get our information from, you know, I honestly don't know. You get your information from different sources or people that you want to look like, and it's not necessarily what's best for you. Mm. And, you know, I started doing my split right now is basically a pull, push, legs, rest day. And now that I'm healthy, I just want to see, you know, what kind of muscle I can build doing a training split that, you know, cause like what John said, you know, I started lifting weights in 2010. Did I know what I was doing? Like, no, you know, no. So I want to see what it looks like, being on a good regimen for a solid amount of time before I start, you know, getting ready to prep for a show again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But again, I'm old, so I think that
there, on this drug topic, I think it's important to tell like the female listeners to look out for some red flags on things that they absolutely should never use. And things that I do see them use, and it's crazy, and it pisses me off, honestly, because it's so misguided on the coaches or like boyfriends. And usually that's it. And they just don't know. Like for when a woman should, if, like I said, testosterone under doctor's supervision for hormone replacement's fine, but using it as like a cycle to build muscle is out of the question. That with like trenbolone, absolutely no way. D-ball, Anadrol. I've seen girls on this. That's ridiculous. Never. Some of the harder like DHT drugs, because DHT is very, very androgenic, which means it has a very strong masculinizing properties. So Provirone, Masterone, Winstrol, all those, if you're just kind of starting out and your coach is putting you on these things, or even advanced, I don't even have women's physique pros. I don't have them on these things. I would never have them on these things. But I see it. These compounds should, in my opinion, never be used. I would maybe, like, if you're some pro women's bodybuilder, hey, they might be doing something like this, but I couldn't do that to someone knowing what it is going to change that person. So if that's what I would say, if these are red flags, like if you're using these type of things, like just know, like there's a very high risk that it's going to have effects on reproductive function, masculizing, and in the long run, you'll have issues.
I think it's so important for people to be able to trust their coach and know that, you know, I'm going to get you looking really awesome just with diet and training and cardio, you know, because most of the time when somebody goes to a new coach or from an old coach, they didn't have that before, you know? So it's like, did you have that before? And did you bring a really great package to the stage? Let's get those three things down so that we can, you know, bring something really great to the stage that you're going to be super proud of.
Yeah, that makes sense. So one more question I want to ask. You know, we've got somebody who is, you know, following all these things. They've gotten their blood work done. Their hormones are good. Menstrual cycle is in check. They've been able to increase their food, and they're staying relatively lean, but they're keeping the cardio down too. I know this is going to vary, and one of the factors is going to be how they respond. Another factor is going to be where their body fat is. In general, how long is a prep going to take for a female? And is that going to be different for males, John?
Yeah, it's, I will say typically my females take longer preps.
Okay.
Just because they normally will sit at a higher body fat than what a male could.
Okay.
Now there's, of course, you know, that would be like the mean average, but you have the extremes, right? Someone that's has a lot of body fat, or you have someone that has very little body fat. So you, if you take out the these extreme anomalies of people and look at in general averages, I would say that my women do take a little longer to prep, and I like doing longer preps just for myself. And by no means am I, you know, I have abs, and I do a 20-week prep. So I have females that a lot of them start around 24 weeks for a prep. And it's just slowly pulling down body fat. It gives time to have little diet breaks or refeeds. The slower dieting process will retain more muscle than some type of rapid process. So don't, when you hear someone, hey, you're going to do a 20-week prep, they think like, oh my gosh, you must not be very good at prepping people. I did this other prep in like 10 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, you could have been a lot better if you gave yourself more time. So, yeah, in general, I'd say my women have a little bit longer prep time.
That makes sense.
I like having, you know, someone to say what show they're wanting to do. You figure out the 12-week mark and then give like 2 extra months because, you know, a lot of times I will say, you know what, let's just get started because we want to make sure that you're on a regimented diet right now. I know not everyone can be like, you know, Scott, I don't know what your lifestyle is like, honestly, but I know John is 100% on all the time. And I don't think everyone takes the quote unquote off season as seriously as he does. And he's a professional, and that's why he is a professional. You know, so when you get somebody and, you know, my questionnaire is the same, tell me exactly what you're eating. And if people don't know, or they've been doing macro dieting, or their diet is, you know, not that there's anything wrong with macro dieting, but you know, you want to have that structure and that routine down, and to be able to get a little bit ahead so that when you hit the 12-week mark, you're within striking distance of that show. And with females especially, like I know for myself, every third week was a plateau. Mm. Like I knew that was going to happen. You know, so you kind of have to just factor in that a 12-week prep is really only 8 productive weeks.
That's a good point.
You know, or 9.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so more time is always better because, like John said too, you can do refeeds or cheat meals, or sometimes people start, you know, let's get started before the holidays. That way I know that you're still going to be able to enjoy your Christmas parties and be on track. So. Yeah.
Anything we're missing here, guys? I want to let everybody know where they can contact you and your social media and everything. But before we do, Is there anything, guys, that we should be touching on that we haven't covered?
Not that I could. I feel like we covered nearly everything. It's pretty well round.
All right. How about you, Deborah? Anything you can think of that we should touch on?
No, I think that you know, I think the main thing that people need to understand, especially with females going into a show, is that there's levels to each, you know, where you should be when you're starting, what you need to have done when you're starting, what's going to be at each level. And you can't play your cards all at once, or you have nothing to play, you know, if you get to the next level. So find somebody who's going to take all that stuff into consideration and help you get to where you need to be. I think that's really important.
Right on. So guys, where can they reach out to you? Deborah, what's your Instagram, and do you have any type of a website set up? What's your email? How should people contact you if they're interested?
Yeah, everything that's Buffcake, Buffcake22 is my Instagram, or With Me Fit is my website. So, and either of those emails, you can reach me at also Buffcake22@gmail, withmefit@gmail. My website is www.withmefit.com.
Right on. So. And how about you, John? I know we did this dance before, but it's been a couple of maybe a month or two. So how can people reach out to you?
Yeah, so I do take DMs on Instagram at JohnJewett3 is my IG handle, and my website is j3sportsrd.com, and I do have my email contact on there, but it is john@j3sportsrd.com.
What's up with the YouTube lately? How's everything going over there?
Yeah, YouTube's going a little slow right now. I've been really busy with clients, but pretty excited because with Ant last year, I did my prep series on my YouTube, and people really loved it because I just kind of explaining the process along the way. But I talked to Animal about putting it on the Animal Pack YouTube channel. So we're going to put out my whole prep series on their channel and follow the whole journey like last time. So we'll have a lot of content coming out this next month.
Oh, that's badass, man. I love everything they do. And I've really appreciated everything you've put out on YouTube too. Guys, we talked about this before, but like I said, not only have you shown your workouts, but then you talk about the why and the reasons behind you're doing what you're doing in your training. So I think it's not only it's inspirational, you know, it's something you can check out before you go to the gym if you want a little bit of like motivation, but at the same time, it could get you thinking, give you some ideas on how you might want to train too. So guys, I highly suggest checking that out. And I will have all that stuff in the show notes. So if you guys want to reach out to Deborah, if you want to reach out to John, that information's all there. Guys, I really appreciate this. This is a really cool conversation. I really appreciate both of your time and your experience in your education.
Thanks a lot, Scott. We appreciate it. And just, being considered to be on a podcast and to look at someone that gives out quality information is it's very humbling, and I hope people really have a good takeaway from it. So thank you, thanks again.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this was absolutely a pleasure. I'm just blown away by the opportunity. It was just really awesome. Thank you. I wanted to add that one of the things that I love about the information that John puts out there is it's suitable for everyone because he hammers the importance of diet and training, which is the foundation of this whole sport. It's just the focus. It's always the focus. And, you know, that's very respectable. So just so cool.
Thanks, Deb.
All right, guys, let's get out of here for another episode of Advices Radio with coach and women's physique competitor Deborah Terpstra and IFBB pro John Jewett. Guys, we will see you soon.
See ya.
Radio.